We got a couple sponsors that always help us put this show on as well. First up, GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department or send you down to Honduras to hang out, like Steven Ferrick's about to do, GraphX Source offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management solutions. And, you know, setups, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, all that good stuff. They're there to help. Campus Inc's six artists.
And, that's and really I'm cool. Brett and Nick are amazing, and Lucas, and I'm going to go to Honduras with them for a weekend in December. So
we're
doing a Campus Inc staff meeting down there. And they've been so great to us. And literally last week, the artists started to get busy and they're like, we think we need to add one. And so I think we're going to be at 7 here pretty shortly. So thanks, Graphic Source. You guys crush it for everyone, for us. If you don't use Graphic Source already, check them out. All right. Easy Way. Bruce, back in the day, you reclaimed screens and you spent hours cleaning dirty screens. And that is a thing of the past, just like you printing. But with Easy Way's screen printing chemicals, their innovative formulas are designed to work quickly and effectively so you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. If you don't subscribe to their email list, you absolutely should, because they put out like guides, booklets. They're just great at teaching and educating the industry. And it's no wonder why their products are so good. So thanks so much, Easy Way. We appreciate you.
Multicraft. Open Instagram, type in multicraft_daddy, and send Dave at Multicraft a DM. Send him a DM with your email address, because he's sending out a bunch of free stuff every single week, PMI tape and a bunch more. And he's using it to help meet people and to help continue to grow Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies. For over 50 years, they've been providing top brands at competitive pricing. And mention the Printavo Pod, that'll get you 10% off your first order. So for your first order, make it a really, really big first order and then mention the Printavo Pod to get the max discount.
All right, Bruce, we have two new sponsors who we've been talking about. The first of which is DGI Apparel. And I want to tell you about DGI and why it's the best new platform to hit the industry. It was built by a group of MIT engineers. Yep, they got to tell you that they're from MIT because they're really smart. They have a background in screen printing and they just left Y Combinator, which is the incubator that launched like companies like Uber. They're there to connect accounts like Sanmar, Alpha Broder, SNS to one portal. So you can compare prices, inventory, shipping times across every supplier on there. They just added AS Color, which is really, really cool. The average shop spends 2 hours purchasing every day, and DGI is going to cut that time in half. So ask yourself, what would I do with an extra hour every day? And you know what, Bruce? There's no promo codes because DGI is free. And it's always going to be free. That's right. It costs $0 for shops. And so you can sign up today at DGI Apparel and tell them that we sent you so that they keep sponsoring this. And join 1,500 other shops that are saving time and money on their purchasing. Thanks so much, DGI.
All right. You got to talk about BMAC because you guys work together quite a bit.
All right. So newest sponsor of the pod, DTF Superstore and BMAC Industries. They are the leader in innovating solutions for the DTF printing industry. They have been at the helm of supplying DTF supplies, printers, kind of since the inception of DTF. And one of the things that DTF Superstore has done is they have developed their own dryer. It's called BMAC, B-M-A-C. And this thing is a tank. It's USA built. And it's going to push the boundaries of what's possible in the DTF industry. So I know that those that have DTF printers, dryers are always an issue. Get yourself a BMAC. This thing is awesome and you're going to love it. So check them out, dtfsuperstore.com. Thanks so much, guys. So Andy, founder, owner, DTF Superstore. Andy, you have been a pioneer, I guess, in the DTF space. We met probably several years ago, and we've obviously worked with you guys pretty closely. We're proud to announce that BMAC DTF Superstore is a sponsor of the Printavo podcast now. So welcome, welcome, welcome. It's been a long time coming. Bruce, where do you want to go? I think the world has seen my DTF journey. We're ready to dive into the nitty gritty of some stuff.
I'd love to learn about the history of DTF Superstore. And it seems like there's been a lot of growth. Steven's talked about it a ton. That industry seems to have grown extremely quickly. It's kind of like the AI of like our space in some ways of just how fast it's come on the scene. How did you start?
At the time DTF kind of came around, we were in building the DTG printers. We had an online forum, an open source, all the code and stuff that ran our printers was open source by us. We created the code and released it. So that's what we were doing, Josiah and I, and then we had one other person at the time, and we were making DTG printers. And one of our customers that bought circuit boards from us over in Asia was like, this new thing, you got to jump on it, Andy. And I was like, I didn't get it at first. And he pushed me and we brought some product in right at the beginning. And as soon as we got it, it was gone. And then it just...
What year was that?
In the end of 2020.
And you brought it to what show?
We didn't bring it to a show. We just brought it in. And then we were posting like on our forum and Facebook about the transfers and the material and how it worked. At the time, it was like me and Kingdom DTF and one or two other people that were kind of messing with it from a side of selling it. And as soon as we get load in, it would be gone. And so I'd order more and then order more. And
so did you start off, Andy, by selling it? Were you always in the supply side of the business and equipment side of it? Or did you run it for yourself, for your own customers first and then extend it to others?
We were in the supply side. We didn't have any print operations. So we were selling the DTG printers and do-it-yourself kits, inks, that kind of stuff. So we were in the supply side of it from the beginning.
Gotcha. So when did the light bulb go off to buy? And so DTFSuperstore.com is, it's a beautiful Shopify experience. I'll compliment you there. It's mostly online. And in our industry, it's scary to see. Not the most common. It's pretty hard to order supplies in our industry. When did you buy that website? When did you actually say, okay, like we are going to run a DTF supply company?
I think I got that around November 2020 or something like that. It was only a couple months in. It was pretty quick that we could tell it was going to be going pretty fast. 2 months in or so.
Talk to us about like the first machines that you brought in. Were you nervous as shit bringing these things in, being like, I don't know what's going to happen? Like,
was it not great?
Did you?
Steven's told us about his early China stories and learning Mandarin.
I think our
for instruction
first
manuals
one
and...
was fall 2021, I want to say. Like what was going through your head there? Like how much of a risk were you taking? Take us through those early days of like, okay, I'm going to launch DTF Superstore.
There was quite a bit of risk in it. The supplies, like I said, seemed to come and go as fast as we got them. At some point in there, we decided to go with Auric, which is, now like Enjoy Print and stuff like that. It's all kind of moved around, but decided to take a flyer, buy a couple of machines and have them on their way. They're about halfway here and a local customer came over at Flyers Direct, came in and was talking like, maybe I'm going to bring in one of those big machines. And I'm like, well, I got two of them on the way. So he ended up buying one and said, hey, let's learn how to do this together. And so that de-risked it a little bit for me.
And then when did the business really start to get legs, right? Like talk us through, you do several millions of dollars now, but when did it really start to get traction? Things really start to pick up, when did you, how much sleep did you lose over it? Like give us a little bit of those early war story days.
It took off quick. I think by the time we were in spring of 2021, we were not selling any more DTG stuff. We had a stockpile of Epson P600s that I bought up, I think 130, 150 of them because they were getting discontinued. And at that point, we were, let's not make DTGs, let's make all these into DTF printers. So it was pretty fast. And then 2021 was, I'd have to do some numbers in my head, but 5-6 times what my 2020 numbers were. And then just every year after that, it just has grown more and more.
If you were to think of the moments in DTF Superstore history and you were to draw it on a timeline, what were the early most pivotal memories that you have? Was it first trade show? Was it, you know, or like the good and the bad? I don't know. Like early on, what would you attribute the success of DTF Superstore now to early on?
Well, I mean, some of the good is it was like shooting fish in a barrel for selling. I mean, we got in early enough that there was such a demand more than the supply. It was kind of unlike anything I've ever sold into before. As much inventory as I could get, I could always move it. That was the positives. The negative is there was a lot of bad batches of things. As you saw with printers, you never knew what you're going to get. We had a pretty rough experience after we were selling some of the Oryx. They were really big. I don't know. I don't think you ever had one of those, Steven, but the case and everything, they were just huge for a two-head printer. And there was a lot of rumblings of people that had bought Oddleys, and two or three of our customers had Oddleys. Hey, these are great machines. We spoke with Oddley. You could get a lot more of them in a container. They didn't take up so much shop space. And so we bought 50 or 60 of those after we tested 6. Everything was good. We bought 50 or 60 more. And that was one of the big ones that hurt. By the time we got done with Oddley and bought over 100, 150 machines, we threw about 20, 30 of them in the garbage, bringing them back from customers. And Oddley even sent out texts and just couldn't get them going.
So like while you're innovating new technology, you're bringing in these machines that are super new to market, probably pissed off a lot of people along the way. Let's just say it, right?
Yeah.
How do you continue to keep growing a company profitably, healthy, while innovating a brand new technology that you sort of don't control the destiny of? You're trusting these things that are coming over. Like, how do you sleep at night? I don't know.
that was a very tough thing. We threw a lot of just money at the problem, to be honest with you. If somebody's printer absolutely wouldn't work, we would replace it. Or we warrantied printheads that we probably shouldn't. We threw away hundreds of thousands of dollars on printheads that probably weren't even the printhead, wasn't even the problem. But somebody's struggling. They say they need a new printhead. It's under warranty. Here you go. You know, here's a printhead. No questions asked. So that was a lot of it. That's how we kind of controlled it. You know, we never got to the point of somebody suing us over a machine. It was kind of no questions asked. That's at a certain point that, hey, we both agree this one's not working. Let's swap it out. Let's get you something new. We did a lot of that. And that's where the 20, 30 Oddleys went in the garbage, is that was bringing them back to give somebody something else.
I'd be panicking a bit.
And you're just fixing software, Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, my gosh, some of the software is hard enough as it is, let alone the hardware. How do you, your business scales 5 times in 1 year. What does that mean for you? I feel like mentally it would be pretty taxing. Team wise, what did the business look like before and after that in just the year?
Oh, in just a year, we stayed pretty lean. I don't remember exactly how many people we added, but the hardest part about that kind of scale is you're not plugging people into existing positions. Like right now, if we want to increase, if orders were to increase that far, you can plug in another shipping guy and the other 3 guys can show them how to do it. Whereas at that time, it was me and Josiah at first, and then I'm handing off things to people that we've never had that position before. So that was probably the hardest thing, is not having standard operating procedures, not having just really, really no structure. It was just kind of like, hey, we need help in shipping. Here's how to use ShipStation, and here we go.
I mean, do you have the space, though, even for everything coming in? Or is everything just on the sidewalks outside, like, you know, waiting to get processed?
Oh, it got pretty tight. The first container loads of Oryx, they were on the water before I had space for them. So we were in the process of, well, when these arrive, we have no place to put them. And that's when I got the current location. I found 7,500 square feet. And that was probably 20, 2021. Yeah, early 2021. We got the space that we're in now.
And the sales were coming from forums and just word of mouth still?
Yeah, yeah. We had our own, the OpenDTG forum. So we had a little bit of a customer base there. That customer base favored the desktop printers, which we exited that fairly quickly. It didn't take long to realize that. I still can't believe people are selling converted Epson desktops for DTF. I mean, that's just, there's no end game there. Somebody's going to get 4 to 6 months out and it's just done. It's just not going to work for them.
So while this is all happening, Andy, you probably notice a lot of other people that want to mirror and mimic you. Maybe I'm going to get into DTF supplies. Maybe I'm going to start selling printers. Maybe I'm going to get it and paint it a different color and give it a different mythological creature's name and try to sell it. When that happens, what happens for you? Do you kind of like laugh and be like, good luck? Do you look at that as a threat? Like, cause you're kind of building for the long game, I feel like, but there's so many pop-up suppliers that are happening and you go at Printing United and they're on every corner. Right. So like what was happening when you started to see that?
Well, I think, you know, I get pretty competitive. So I would just try a little harder to stay ahead of everybody. In the beginning, it was, nobody had them in stock. So that's where I was beating people is, well, people will call and say, how long is it going to take to get it? Well, it'll ship in a couple of days, whereas everybody else is 8 weeks out on them. So I tried to just be more competitive. Sure, it makes me nervous. It always makes you nervous when somebody's trying to knock off a piece of your pie. But yeah, there was a certain amount of like, they don't know what they're getting into. I kind of came from getting my butt kicked in DTG printers. So we had a little bit of a taste of that from DTG, understanding what we were getting into and that you can't just sell a machine and not have to support it or not have to worry about warranty. China doesn't back up these warranties. They'll give you a few free parts here and there, but you're basically, you're backstopping the warranty. So I guess I was a little more mentally prepared for taking those big losses and looking at it and saying, well, sucks that we threw $100,000 in the garbage, but we're still ahead, you know, 50,000 or 150,000 or whatever that number is. Some people just can't stomach the losses, I don't think.
How did you stomach, though, the losses there? I mean, were you still able to turn a profit even with throwing out so many machines and going through this sort of R&D process of finding the right vendors? And, you know, I'm sure the consumables aspect is a whole nother piece of it, but you know, were you able to still clear a profit through that phase?
Yeah, we're still profitable. We've been profitable every year. I own 100% of the company, so I don't have any backing. So I don't really have an option but to keep it profitable. I would say this year is going to be our least profitable. We just sunk so much money into manufacturing and stuff like that. And that last year we did the expo that sunk a little cash, but really the manufacturing, we've sunk a ton of cash into that.
This is a little bit of a cool peek behind manufacturing, because I feel like sometimes the companies will get so big, they won't really share as much as probably you will. But, you know, is it sort of like a car in a way where it's like they try to get you to sell the car? They don't make a ton of money there, but it's more the maintenance and the consumables, and that's where you pick up, you know, margin on, and that's where, you know, you can use that to feed the business forward. Is it more of a combination of both, where you can make good margin on both, or like what does that look like?
When the dust settles on the machine with all the support and warranty and stuff, yeah, there's not a lot of money in it. There's not a lot of money in that, but that is how you build your consumable base. And, you know, you got film, powder, and inks that you have a pretty decent margins on them at this point, but those are starting to get crushed a little. But yeah, that's kind of the razor blade theory or whatever you want to say, is you're selling somebody a machine to get your consumables in the door. And that's the best way to build up that business.
And that's how you keep people in, along with, I mean, you guys do a lot of the community stuff. My gosh, like the trade show, the magazine, you know, so much content to be able to help people. Even with though the pricing probably coming down, I gotta imagine there's just so much junk out there. Once someone gets burned once, they would rather go with a little bit nicer quality stuff that you have.
Oh, definitely. And as long as you keep somebody happy and they don't have issues. Like, ink is one of those things that it's not enjoyable to switch inks. You got to go through color profiling. You got the risk of how is it just going to react with all my processes and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, once you get somebody, and if you can keep them happy and keep stuff in stock and hopefully keep consistency from batch to batch from the suppliers in China, you usually keep a repeat customer. Our sales, I don't know what they are right now, but usually in a month, 70 or 80% of our sales are repeat customers.
Interesting. So I just want to share something with y'all. I was studying HP. I was just Googling this, like Hewlett Packard. In fiscal year 2023, HP's revenue was $54 billion. 25 of that came from computers. 11.5 billion came from printer supplies, and only 4 billion came from the actual sale of printers themselves. So is kind of the theory, break even on the machine, get them to buy film and ink, and like, that's how you, is that more valuable to you that Campus Ink buys ink and film from you than the actual machine?
Yes, it is. It definitely is that way.
Gotcha. So like, cause I think a lot of criticism, and I would see it, is like DTF Superstore sells printers for cheap, but what you really care about is how much am I spending on consumables and stuff like that. Do you, and we'll just take my business, for instance, I don't even know how much we spend on consumables. I should probably look, but it's probably way more than I've spent on the printers themselves, I think, right? It could be in the amount of several thousand dollars per month. And so can we talk a little bit about support? Because I think what's really interesting is when I started working with you all versus where you're at now, can you talk about the journey in education, resources, support? What has that been like for you? How much have you dedicated to it? Because I think the business has changed quite a bit in terms of how you support your customers.
Yeah, support is always the hardest thing to scale, because when it started out, it was me. I would go do installs. I would fly out and set up somebody's work printer, train them how to use it. And I had the years of DTG experience all the way back to 2007 when I had some of Fresner's machines. But T-Jet, yeah, what's that?
T-Jet, right? Scott Fresner on the T-Jet.
T-Jet 2 and then the Blazers when they came out. So yeah, support is the hardest thing to scale. So at some point in there, Josiah was always helping me build the DTG printers. He transitioned over into support. He still runs support. And we've added quite a few people. I think with traveling techs, we have roughly a dozen techs, something like that, on staff, between phone techs and traveling techs. Yeah, that is always the hardest thing. And we still run into it to this day, of where some of our install techs, they are really good at setting up the printer and getting somebody going. But if you ask them questions beyond that about processes and specialty items and stuff like that, it's tough to get everybody up to speed of what maybe a seasoned shop owner would know.
And so can we talk a little bit about that? Like, your customer base is not a seasoned screen printer, right? Isn't your customer base, can you talk a little bit about your customer base? Cause I think this is interesting. Like, most people listening to this are screen print shop owners, but in the DTF world, it's completely different. Can you talk about who, if Bob was your target demographic of who DTF Superstore sells to, who is your Bob?
It would be, I mean, there are some screen print shops, more so now. I think people are coming around farther now. Some of the traditional guys get, you know, stuck with, oh, the screen printing is an art form and that digital stuff. You know, some of the old guys get grumbly about that. But, you know, DTF really started out with a lot of more of your home-based businesses and the crafty people. Some of them maybe had embroidery or whatever, but a lot of our bigger customers that have been with us from the very beginning, they were more of what you call your cricket moms or your out of the garage type people, that they started with a desktop Epson and now they have four or five or more. Some of them have 8, 9 forehead printers now, because they at the same time I was building the supply business, they caught the wave of the printing business, and it was kind of the same thing. A lot of people didn't want to buy equipment, but ooh, I want to buy transfers. So
wait, are the Cricut moms like scaling to a big shop too?
Yeah,
Cricut moms are turning into DTF dads, baby.
Holy cow. Wait, what? Wait, so I'm curious about that. So now it's not just, you know, a small business in their whatever side bedroom or some space either anymore. So they've transitioned and totally skipped the screen printing world. And are they still doing custom apparel, or is it more like branded stuff, you think?
It's a mix of both, but the people that started at the beginning, a lot of them just grew out their wholesale transfer business. You know, they're the ones that took a chunk out of like Supercolor and those kind of places. You know, they started with a desktop, and then they've grown into a shop with multiple employees. And I mean, some of these places, I mean, they're in the low millions of revenue a year, and they started out of their bedroom at the same time we started selling machines.
So most of them, you think, are selling transfers. They're not applying it or doing the rest of this stuff, or, you know,
the highest volume people are reselling transfers. There's a couple, we have a couple of big customers that have four or five machines, and they're huge on TikTok, and they do more of their own designs. You know, they'll catch whatever's trendy, stuff that you would see on Etsy, trendy sayings, holiday stuff, whatever. And they just sit there and pump it on their TikToks. And so those couple of customers, they'll keep four or five machines busy with only their own stuff. But the rest of our high volume people are selling wholesale transfer.
Wow. Wouldn't have thought that.
Do you think that is becoming a commoditized market? Do you think that's a race to the bottom where now you have the Ninjas, the Supas, the Fusions, you've got all of these big guys that are going installs, right? And they're going to sell for pennies on the dollar, and they're going to be fast. They're going to ship quick. Their quality is going to get better and better. And then you have these hobbyists that are also selling to that same market. Do you think at a certain point they're in trouble if you are a hobbyist that sells transfers to other people, or like a single shop owner that sells transfers to other?
Maybe to a certain extent. I guess I've always played the game of grabbing some market share, and that was some of my reason early on of setting prices more fairly and not gouging, or, you know, printers could have probably been more expensive that they didn't need to. Was I wanted to grab market share, because I think once you have a certain core amount of customers, it makes it that much harder for somebody else to get in. So I think some of these people that grew that business, they have their core customers, and they keep them happy, and it'll be a tough for a Ninja or somebody to completely eat their lunch.
Yeah. What do you think of the new Ninja with SNS activewear thing?
Mixed feelings. This market to me is just so weird, where it seems to get rid of a lot of the norms.
Yeah. I think it's interesting.
Historically, you wouldn't think that a supplier would cross that line. But now you're getting it to where people that are selling DTF, wholesale transfers are also selling supplies, and it's just the lines are getting really blurred.
Okay, so let's go there, because I know, so one of the things DTF Superstore and you have developed is this dryer, this BMAC dryer. And so everyone knows, most of the dryers historically have come from China, and they're tough, they're fickle, they're leaky, they have exhaust issues, you know, things go out on all of them all the time. You made a decision to start manufacturing your own dryers here in the United States. And that was a big pivot. Can you talk to us about why you decided to do that? What was the motive behind it? How is it going? You're going to be selling these to other suppliers, I think, right? Like, you're crossing into some new territory. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, it just kind of came from the fact that we couldn't get very reliable dryers, or there's always issues. One time we got a container load of dryers that had no on-off switches and no emergency stops. Like, it was just always like a grab bag or a Christmas surprise when you get a container
load. What was the switch? Just plugging it in?
Well, they're like, oh, you can take the panel off on the bottom and there's a breaker on the inside. And we're, yeah, that doesn't really work for American customers. So it was stuff like that, just pushed us over. We would request features and never get them. And even though we were buying a lot, and they'd always be, hey, you are one of our bigger customers, and whatever you need, let us know. And we'd let them know, and then it wouldn't happen. We would push for UL tested parts, and it just wouldn't happen, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So when I went out to Arizona, I saw like DTF Superstore, and then I saw this like factory that you've built, basically bending sheet metal, powder coating, electronic panels, all this stuff. I don't even want to know how much you spent on equipment back there, but why do you believe like dryers is your next big thing? Like why are you really bullish on that? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I guess part of it is that was a difficult project that I thought we could tackle. You know, building a printer from scratch is multiples time harder than building a dryer. And so I thought we could solve our problem that we're having with the dryers, and all the other dealers are having similar issues. The other thing is I really feel that this market is going to go to Epson and Brother, Mamaki, Roll, and the big guys will steamroll into this market the way they did in DTG, and might not be now. China's putting up a pretty good fight because they keep improving their printers, but someday it's going to come down to those guys. And a lot of times they don't build the other part of it. Even in screen printing and stuff like that, some of your bigger guys, they bring in a dryer from someone else.
So what are you trying to solve on the, what does the BMAX solve that the other machines don't? Cause you sent me something, you said, this is where I'm having fun. Like this is where my sweet spot is and I'm just going to crush with this dryer. And I could see there was, you sounded different when you talked about it, right? Can you talk and brag a little bit about this dryer and what it's going to do? I don't know.
The biggest thing was just reliability. We made a checklist of all the things that screwed us on the Chinese dryers, but the biggest one was just keeping it simple, keep it reliable. You know, there's other features about serviceability. A problem with Chinese dryers, you get one out there, it has problems, you throw some parts at it. Oh, shoot, we can't get it fixed remotely. Got to send out a tech. You got to ship this thing back. So that was a big one. We made it modular. So it's in three sections. It's got the shaker, the oven, and then the electronics module will pop off. So there's no more asking somebody, hey, go replace this relay or change the power supply. We just can pop the box off and send them a whole new thing.
I'm a little bit stuck on the part of all the equipment and everything. So wait, did you have all of this stuff before? Or so you bought, you know, leased a building or bought a building, whatever, bought all this equipment, found people that know how to run it to make dryers. Okay. So, what does something like that cost roughly?
What are the different pieces of equipment that you had to buy to build a dryer?
I mean, a laser cutter, the cheap ones are, I think the one we bought was like $110,000, and that's on the low end. You can drop $500,000 on a laser cutter pretty easy. The sheet metal bender, the one Steve was talking about, the computerized one, I think that was $250 or $300. So we have multiple bending machines. We have the powder coat. You're going to sink $500,000 to $1 million just into equipment. If you want to do it all in-house, you can outsource, but then you're going to struggle, or in my estimations, you're going to struggle competing with China because they're going to kick your butt on price. So you can't have anybody else making a profit on your powder coating or making profit on your bending. You got to do it in-house.
And then the people to start to find, how do you think about financing or investing in a business like this? Is this like, all right, I've saved a bunch of cash, we're going to use this so I don't feel stressed? Or is it, let me work with a banking partner and or some sort of, you know, investor or something like that to help get started?
It probably would have been smart to bring in some investors. And we've talked about it in the past of maybe at some point here, I should bring in some cash to really throw some more fuel on the fire. But it was a little more of a grip it and rip it. And where it ended up is different than maybe where we thought it was going to start. So the first step was hiring a seasoned engineer and getting somebody in here that's a mechanical engineer and a electrical engineer and getting those guys going on it. And then starting to get an idea for how are we going to build it? We didn't run out and buy bending equipment or cutters or anything until we kind of had an idea of how are we putting this thing together.
And you're starting from scratch as in like, okay, hey, I like this machine, but here's what we don't like about it. Can you build a version where it has XYZ? I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
It's a little Steve Jobsy.
I think it was about a year from when I hired Keith, the engineer, to DTF Expo. And DTF Expo was the one that we showed it first.
And so you literally are like sinking. It's interesting when print shops think about like investing, like to get long-term payoff, you're literally sinking $1 million before you, and a year of time before you can even sell one. That's like half the battle, is even getting it like to be sellable, right? And then you've got to sell hundreds of them to even start to break even. Are you concerned that like a China or someone is going to come in and make a better dryer? Like why was there so much confidence in the BMAC, and why do you believe that it's going to be a game changer? Because
if he sees a Shopify order to Shenzhen or something, he's canceling it.
Well, I guess I always felt that we had a certain amount of built-in customer DTF Superstore. So that takes a little of the risk away. DTF Superstore can't quite sell enough to get it to break even, but we can get pretty close. So that took some of the risk away. I think if I move fast enough, we could establish it as a, I don't even know what the word would be, but the standard in the industry, I guess. Yeah, I think if I get enough dealers, get enough people having them in their hands and seeing the difference, you know, customers that struggled with Chinese ones and we swapped them out for a BMAC or however those went down, have come back and bought more of them because they're like, well, maybe it doesn't have this feature and that feature, but damn it, every time I turn it on, it just works all day long. And that's, in the end, people realize like that's what matters. You got to run your business. You got to get transfers out.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting here is you started as your own supplier, right? Now you're creating things that can be sold by other suppliers and other distributors. Do you feel like that's weird that another DTF supplier, let's just take, you know, a Lawson or something, they might be interested in selling your BMAC because it's superior, but then they're also competing on the consumables and the printer and all that kind of stuff. Like that's a little blurry, right? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little blurry. I think it gets a little more blurry for some of the dealers than it does me, because I know where I'm at in my head, and BMAC and Superstore, we're in the same complex, but it's separate staff and stuff like that. So it's separate companies, separate books. There's not a crossover where, yeah, there's some competition there, but I guess I look at it more as I'm not going to sell every Mamaki machine that gets sold in the US. I'm not going to sell every China. It's going to be a small percentage, but if I can get a chunk of that sale by getting my dryer in there, that's part of it. And another part of it is people go around you all the time when you're buying from China or this or that. So if I can have a unique brand, a unique product that's better than what's out on the market, and ultimately, whether you buy it from Superstore or a dealer, it always comes back to me. So that's a lot of it, too. We're trying to develop better products, unique products, and have something that other people don't have and that you just can't be like, oh, I'll just go buy it from China for 20% cheaper than you or whatever. If you want it and you want the quality, you got to come back to us.
How's sales been going for the dryer?
Good. I think we signed up like a dozen dealers in the last month ever since the sales guy started.
That's awesome. Wow, good for you. I feel like what an investment, though. I mean, Steve, can you imagine putting let's call it closer to $1 million, like when it's all, you know, fleshed out and time-wise and salaries and all this stuff?
Well, it's probably north of that.
it's probably north of that. I want to talk about something that I've noticed you do, Andy, and Bruce actually used to do this early on. Like he'd say, like, I'm going to own the space. I'm going to throw the party. Right. So early on at Printavo, Bruce was super bullish on, while Printavo was growing, on content and education, resources, conferences. And he's like, I want, you know, the Printavo iPad on every manufacturer and every press, like everywhere. And wherever they run into, they're just going to run into Printavo. And I think a lot of why Printavo is successful is it is a platform, but it's also a community. It's an ecosystem, right? Like, and you've started to do that. You've started DTF Superstore. You went in with Mamaki, right? You started BMAC. You also bought DTF.com and DTF Printing. You're also putting on the expo, right? So like all the lines are a little bit blurred, but there's a lot of intentionality in the way that you operate for the long term that I think a lot of people are looking at and saying, well, that's pretty smart. That's pretty smart. Can you talk about, is that like a thesis of the way you were trained to operate in business? You know, because no one else is doing it the same way. And I think it's noteworthy.
I don't know. I think we just, if we come up with an idea and it sounds like a good idea, we don't really stop ourselves just because, well, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. Like the expo, I don't know where I come up with it, but I kind of threw it out to everybody here and they're like, yeah, we should. And so within 5 minutes, I was like, okay, well, we're going to do an expo.
And you're okay that your competitors are across the aisle from you.
Well, I think that's the only way it works. And I think that was the hardest hurdle to get over when I was calling competitors and, you know, hey, this is Andy from Superstore. Will you come to our expo? And they're like, yeah, but we sell the same thing. Are you, what am I going to bring if I can't bring my DTF printers? And I was like, no, you bring that. That's this whole thing is. So you have to compartmentalize. And I think I do a pretty good job of that is, well, our expo, everybody's walking around with a bag that said Cobra Flex on the side of it and Kingdom DTF lanyards. And it doesn't bother me one bit because it still serves its purpose. And I think it, everybody's going to make money. It's going to make me more money. It puts me a little more cemented in the industry, to be honest with you. And, you know, the first year it was 100% my money that put it on, but these years coming up, I will always have my free booth because vendors will start having to pay and sponsors and that kind of thing. So it's built in a long-term, you know, show that I have access to a nice booth.
Andy's a gunslinger. You're like a modest gunslinger. You know, I mean, putting on a conference, no easy task, but you put on a big one, you know, put up your own cash. Starting a new company is hard. Starting another one that's like actually manufacturing stuff, very hard. You know, I mean, like what through these last 4 years, what was a point that maybe stood out in your head as the worst time? And I'm going to get to the best time too, but like, this is like kind of like a fuck this
yesterday. This no. Steven's calling. Yeah. Texting me on a Sunday morning and blowing me up because his mongoose is down and yeah, he just won't let go of it. Those were some fun days.
pick another dark day. Yeah. Pick number two.
Sunday number two that Dennis, or not Dennis, but Steven was texting me. I don't know. There's ups and downs. You know, you can have a day where you're like, man, we are just killing it and we're conquering the world. And then the next day you're just.
Yeah. But what was one time that kind of stood out? If the first thing you think about, if it was like, man, this, and it's, maybe it's hard to think about the worst one, but it was just like, this was pretty crappy the way this all ended out. And obviously you made it through it, but.
Man, that's a tough one. I mean, there's been a lot of hard knocks. Like I said, we've had our ups and downs with the Chinese printers. You know, some of them have been better than others. I don't know. I guess I would have to think more on that.
What about the greatest high?
Oof.
I mean, the BMAC rolling out was a pretty big high. It's a regular high. It's kind of a weird situation for me to think, wow, we created that. Because when you look at it up close and you use it, it's a very professional product. And as much as I would like to think I'm a professional person, it still feels a little weird that this idea that we had, you know, 2 years ago to put it all together and put the right people together. And that's really what it's about is not me. It's the right people came in and made it happen to from nothing to have something that's not just a piece of shit. You know, it's nice.
I think the one thing that I've seen, Andy, is through the ups and the downs and the volatility of the industry, you've always kind of stayed calm, cool, collected. Like you get ripped on the forums if there's a bad batch of film or this or that. And you're just like, steady Eddie, you're going to have some good days. You're going to have some bad days. You're going to respond the best you can. You might not respond to everyone, but you're constantly moving up and to the right. If you were to look into a glass ball 5 years from now, you've got Expo running, DTFprinting.com, which is a forum that you can all subscribe to. Our friend Adrian runs it. You've got BMAC, you've got DTF Superstore. What does Andy look like then? What does this company look like 5 years from now, if you could dream a little bit?
I think it'll be more of the same. I think as BMAC progresses, I want to throw more money at engineers. I mean, we need to get we need more software engineers, I guess it would be the word. We need to bring in software engineers. We have electrical engineering, we have mechanical. We haven't really got into like the chemistry of doing anything on our own on that side of inks or, you know, powders, that kind of thing. But that's where I'd like to build. That's where my interest is in building things and, you know, become more of a, I don't know, vertically integrated company is the way to say it, but control our destiny a little bit more. And then when we want a new printer or a new piece of software, we can do it the way we want it instead of buying a piece of software that runs cutting machines and CNC machines and, oh, it does DTG and it also does screen print separations, all these things. It'd be nice to do the same as we did with the dryer and sit down and list, this is what DTF needs in a piece of software, end to end it, and have control over that and not be dealing with large conglomerates to try to make that happen.
Someday we'll get Rich Hoffman on here from M&R to tell his story. We're working on it. Rich, if you're out there. But I almost feel like what you're doing is a little of like the early days at M&R. I don't know. Are you nervous? You probably see like screen printers are now not buying more screen printing presses. They're buying transfers and they'll probably be buying DTF machines shortly if they haven't already. I know my friends have started, but like the Rocks and the M&Rs, like they're starting to kind of get in there with, you know, these really nice heat presses on presses kind of thing. Are you worried about them creeping down into this space a little too much with the muscle they have? Does that scare you at all?
Yeah, a little bit, but not as bad as probably what scares me more is Epson coming out with a $7,500 decent printer and every Epson dealer can sell it. That would hurt me. That would hurt me more than M&R selling the same forehead we sell for double the money. Like that doesn't, there's
different,
the people.
Different color.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a different color. I forgot. Yeah. So it's not the same printer, it's a different color. But you know, you get the bigger people like that, and even Rock, I mean, that Impress is, it's awesome. It's an awesome machine, but $90,000 with all the bells and whistles. That's tough. My customer base isn't really playing in that market, I don't think.
Do you think they'd reach out to buy you guys or at least the dryer business, because it's, you know, a lot more proprietary and, you know, you figure it out. You could save them years of development and so on.
I don't know. I think at some point that's always been in the back of my mind is we got in on the ground floor on a lot of this and we have some assets that would be hard to duplicate. We have some Google rankings. The Facebook group's got 80, 90,000 people. You know, some of that stuff, it would be really hard to go back and create that now because you missed the wave. But yeah, when you're making equipment and you have your own, well, you know, Bruce, when you have your own software and some of that stuff, it's not as simple as people would think to go duplicate it. And somebody will come along at some point and be like, well, it's a lot easier just to buy this than it is to spend years trying to figure it out.
It's interesting how some manufacturers or people that want to enter in the space don't understand the value of a Facebook group or what data is worth or what SEO is worth or like a customer list. And I think in the background, you guys are building that for kind of the long game. I think what I see starting to happen, and I'll just use my example, is I have a group of, I don't know, 15, 20 of us in a text chain. And for the longest time, they would just basically say, Steven, you are the guinea pig. We're going to keep buying transfers. You're the guinea pig. We're just going to live vicariously through all your issues. In the last year or two, three of them have now bought DTF machines. And so like the screen printing industry, I feel like is more reserved and they're just like watching everything happen. But in the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, we're starting to see some dominoes drop. And that's where I think the Impress might actually work. Because for me, if I could spend $90,000 on a robot, but save one employee, that's like me spending money on a unicoder or a direct to screen. And so I think it's starting to move upstream and more enterprisey, which is probably going to be a little bit different of a customer base. Bruce, what do you think when you have observed from the little or a lot that you know, what do you think is going to happen to the space?
It reminds me of Uber when Uber started in Uber Blacks, and it was, you know, that was the only thing they did. It was high-end transfer from point A to point B. You know, going to the airport, now maybe let's call it $40, then maybe $100, $150, because it was only for that top echelon of products. It's similar to Tesla. When Tesla came out with their, you know, Roadster or something was the first product. It was extremely expensive and so on. But Elon said it was the master plan. That is used to fund one step down, you know, the Model S, which is 100, 150 call it, and that's used to fund one step down Model 3, call it 50K, and so on. My guess is that's the slow progression of where things move to, or, you know, it starts at that high end for the pricing, at least for Rock Impress similar, and then slowly moves down as they're able to figure out, get the costs lower, become more efficient. You know, it becomes more mass market. It's not as early adoptery, and it slowly moves down. But the caveat to that is that it seems like Andy's going from bottom up with, like, I think I forget about sort of, I don't know if it's even called the hobbyist, because if these, you know, people who bought this then are now have escalated, it's almost like, I feel like a lot of the printers that we hang out with and got to know were the ones who started, they lost their jobs in 08. They started shops, and then 10, 15 years later, they're running these huge operations. And that seems to be the path of where this newer generation of printers and everything is supplying to. And let's say, sure, it does become more commoditized. They will, I'm sure, figure it out, though. It's not like they're going to throw up their hands. They'll figure it out and pivot to where they have to go to and continue selling as well. So, yeah, I don't know. It's like going from top down and bottom up at the same time. I feel like, you know, Andy, I feel like you're I get the sense that you're a product guy. Like, you really enjoy the engineering and the building, the hands-on. I think, you know, I love product and being in the software and thinking about that more than the other stuff. I think Steven, you know, fantasizes about being in production more, but, you know, is it? No, no, just kidding. But how do you balance that with running, let's call it, two businesses, basically, and, you know, needing the CEO, right? The leader of the company with the product person. Because it's a funky, like, internal thing, I think, of growth, of jumping from maybe more of the product person to the CEO person while not losing the product.
I guess I have to do a bunch of stuff I don't want to do to get to do a little bit of the stuff I want to. But I guess my perspective is, too, is the supply business and some of the more mundane things that maybe don't interest me. It still is part of the end game of, I've always wanted to have the capability to manufacture stuff. I mean, long before this, at times in my life, it popped my, like, at anybody, oh, this product would be cool and nobody has it. Well, how do you go about building it? Well, I'm getting in a situation where I'll have a factory that, whether it's plastic stuff, steel stuff, whatever, and with the engineering, that if you get a crazy idea and you want to just go make it, you can make it. So I guess that's how I rationalize it in my head, is I do a bunch of stuff I don't necessarily want to do for the end game of, it funds me being able to have engineers on staff and a factory out back. And I know these guys get tired of me saying it, but every time somebody comes up with an idea for a little accessory or an add-on to the Super Shaker, and Keith and Jerry and I talk, and within a day or two, it's bolted on a Super Shaker and we're testing it. I'm like, man, isn't it nice having a factory out back? It's just, it's fun.
Fair. We need to get a factory. How do we, Andy,
we need a factory.
Yeah, maybe we'll just set up a little shack outside Gilbert, Arizona.
It's funny because, like, some that, ideas. When a business owner finally gets to play, like, it sounds like that's play for you. Like, that's fun. That's a lot of fun. Well, Andy, this has been awesome. So, you know, thank you, first of all, for being a sponsor of the podcast. We appreciate it. If you don't have one, check out dtfsuperstore.com. Also, check out dtfprinting.com. There's education resources there. And then if you have a DTF printer and you need a dryer, check out the BMAC and give it a good look. We still need to review it, which we will. But love what you're doing.
On DTF Superstore, or do you have to go to bmacindustries.com?
Yeah. I think we don't sell anything direct on BMAC. It'll just tell you where to buy it. There's, you know, a dozen dealers or so on there.
Yeah. And they're shipping like ASAP? BMACs are shipping?
Stock. We have them in stock. We ramped up production, so.
Sweet. Sweet, sweet, sweet. So check out the BMAC and stay tuned. And we'll have to do this again. Just check the progression of things, because I think your story is really special and cool. So, yeah, this is great.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Pronouncers. We appreciate you guys joining us for another episode of the podcast. And We'll see you guys in the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.